Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. What's up, crew? Welcome back to the Cryptoconomy with Guy Swan, the guy who has written more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And guess what we're going to do today? We're going to read about Bitcoin. And I'm actually going to be getting into a couple of longer pieces soon. And I think they're going to be really, really good. And they're a little bit, one of them in particular is about the open source environment. And I'm kind of excited about really digging into that, particularly from a historical standpoint. But just so you know, that's coming, and we've got Aaron Van Verdam on the show. That will probably be dropping next Monday, I think, is when I'm going to put that episode out. Had a really great conversation with him, literally a lot of fun, and went into a bunch of crazy stuff. So I'm excited to drop that one. Don't forget to subscribe at The Crypto Economy or, of course, in whatever podcast app you've got. And leave me a review, too, if you've been enjoying the show and have, if you're a new listener, you know, and I love feedback of all kinds. So it would, I would really appreciate it if you would do that. So today, however, we are going to be jumping into Plan B, the guy who has really just exploded with his stock-to-flow ratio analysis of the Bitcoin price. He's gone from, in like 9 months, he went from like 150 followers to, what is he at, like 25,000 followers now. It's at 100, actual number, trillion USD. That's the tag that he's under. And this is just a really fascinating, like, model for analyzing the Bitcoin price. And it's a little bit, there's a lot of numbers in this and a number of charts that I'm going to sort of explain, but really you just kind of need to see them. And I'm sure most of you listeners probably have. But the article itself is just really, really good. And I think it will be fun to talk about this model afterward. So I'm going to dig into it anyway. And hopefully, it's still a really good piece, even if it's a little bit hard, I'm sure, in audio to follow the numbers and charts. So I'll do my best, but it's also not incredibly long. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into one more ado. Do not forget tomorrow. That is Wednesday, the first. The tickets for BitBlock Boom go up in price. So do not forget, if you're going to do that, if you're going to join me out at BitBlock Boom in Dallas on August 17th and 18th, do not forget to go ahead and get your tickets. And don't forget about my discount code CC that will get you 30% off. That happens tomorrow. So make the decision now. You don't want to have to pay a higher price. All right, guys. With that, now let's jump into our article by Plan B, titled Modeling Bitcoin's Value with Scarcity. Introduction. Satoshi Nakamoto published the Bitcoin white paper on October 31st, 2008, created the Bitcoin Genesis block on January 3rd, 2009, and released the Bitcoin code on January 8th, 2009. So begins a journey that leads to a $70 billion Bitcoin market today. Bitcoin is the first scarce digital object the world has ever seen. It is scarce like silver and gold and can be sent over the internet, radio, satellite, etc. Quote, as a thought experiment, imagine there was a base metal as scarce as gold, but with the following properties. Boring gray in color, not a good conductor of electricity, not particularly strong, not useful for any practical or ornamental purpose. But one special magical property. can be transported over a communications channel. End quote. Satoshi Nakamoto. Surely this digital scarcity has value, but how much? In this article, I quantify scarcity using stock to flow and use stock to flow to model Bitcoin's value. Scarcity and stock to flow. Dictionaries usually define scarcity as, quote, a situation in which something is not easy to find or get, and a lack of something. Nick Szabo has a more useful definition of scarcity. Unforgeable costliness. Quote, what do antiques, time, and gold have in common? They are costly, due either to their original cost or the improbability of their history, and it is difficult to spoof this costliness. There are some problems involved with implementing unforgeable costliness on a computer. If such problems can be overcome, we can achieve bit gold. End quote. Szabo. Quote, precious metals and collectibles have an unforgeable scarcity due to the costliness of their creation. This once provided money, the value of which was largely independent of any trusted third party. But you can't pay online with metal. Thus, it would be very nice if there were a protocol whereby unforgeably costly bits could be created online with minimal dependence on trusted third parties, and then securely stored, transferred, and assayed with similar minimal trust. Bit gold. End quote. By Nick Szabo. Bitcoin has unforgeable costliness because it costs a lot of electricity to produce new bitcoins. Producing bitcoins cannot be easily faked. Note that this is different for fiat money and also for altcoins that have no supply cap, have no proof of work, have a low hash rate, or have a small group of people or companies that can easily influence supply, etc. Saifedean Ammous talks about scarcity in terms of stock-to-flow ratio. He explains why gold and Bitcoin are different from consumable commodities like copper, zinc, nickel, brass, because they have high stock-to-flow. Quote, for any consumable commodity, doubling of output will dwarf any existing stockpiles, bringing the price crashing down and hurting the holders. For gold, a price spike that causes a doubling of annual production will be insignificant, increasing stockpiles by 3% rather than 1.5%. It is this consistently low rate of supply of gold that is the fundamental reason it has maintained its monetary role throughout human history. The high stock-to-flow ratio of gold makes it the commodity with the lowest price elasticity of supply. The existing stockpiles of Bitcoin in 2017 were around 25 times larger than the new coins produced in 2017. This is still less than half of the ratio for gold, but around the year 2022, Bitcoin's stock-to-flow ratio will overtake that of gold. End quote. Ammous. So, scarcity can be quantified by stock to flow. Stock to flow equals stock divided by the flow. Stock is the size of the existing stockpiles or reserves. Flow is the yearly production. Instead of stock to flow, people also use supply growth rate or flow divided by stock. Note that stock to flow equals 1 divided by the supply growth rate. Let's look at some stock to flow numbers. Gold stock is 185,000 tons. Flow is 3,000 tons. So the stock to flow is 62, with a supply growth of 1.6% and price per ounce of $1,300. Market value, $8.4 trillion. Silver. Stock is 550,000 tons. Flow is 25,000 tons, or a stock to flow of 22. Supply growth is 4.5%. Price per ounce is $16, with $308 billion market value. Palladium stock is 244 tons. Flow is 215 tons, or a stock to flow of 1.1. The supply growth is 88.1%. Price per ounce is $1,400. Market value, $11.9 billion. And platinum has a stock of 86 tons, a flow of 229 tons, or a stock to flow of 0.4, with a supply growth of 266.7%. At $800 per ounce, it is a $2.4 billion market value. Gold has the highest stock to flow at 62. It takes 62 years of production to get current gold stock. Silver is second with stock to flow of 22. This high stock to flow makes them monetary goods. Palladium, platinum, and all other commodities have stock to flows barely higher than 1. Existing stock is usually equal or lower than yearly production, making production a very important factor. It is almost impossible for commodities to get a higher stock to flow because as soon as somebody hoards them, price rises, production rises, and price falls again. It is very hard to escape this trap. Bitcoin currently has a stock of 17.5 million coins and new supply of 0.7 million per year, or a stock to flow of 25. This places Bitcoin in the monetary goods category, like silver and gold. Bitcoin's market value at current prices is $70 billion. Supply of Bitcoin is fixed. New Bitcoins are created in every new block. Blocks are created every 10 minutes, on average, when a miner finds the hash that satisfies the proof of work required for a valid block. The first transaction in each block, called the coinbase, contains the block reward for the miner that found the block. The block reward consists of the fees that people pay for transactions in that block and the newly created coins, called subsidy. The subsidy started at 50 bitcoins and is halved every 210,000 blocks, about every 4 years. That's why halvings are very important for Bitcoin's money supply and stock to flow. Halvings also cause the supply growth rate, in Bitcoin context usually called monetary inflation, to be stepped and not smooth. And here he just shows the a chart of the block height against the amount of Bitcoins in circulation as it tapers toward 21 million, and just shows that we are on the we are two steps in. We started at 50, moved down to 25, are down to 12.5, and then it will continue at 6.25, 3.125, et cetera, et cetera, until you reach the end of Bitcoin's actual monetary inflation. Stock to flow and value. The hypothesis in this study is that scarcity, as measured by stock to flow, directly drives value. A look at the table above confirms that market values tend to be higher when stock to flow is higher. The next step is to collect data and make a statistical model. Data. I calculated Bitcoin's monthly stock to flow and value from December 2009 to February 2019. 111 data points in total. Number of blocks per month can be directly queried from the Bitcoin blockchain with Python, RPC, or BitcoinD. Actual number of blocks differs quite a bit from the theoretical number because blocks are not produced exactly every 10 minutes. For example, in the first year, 2009, there were significantly less blocks. With the number of blocks per month and known block subsidy, you can calculate flow and stock. I corrected for lost coins by arbitrarily disregarding the first million coins, or 7 months, in the stock to flow calculation. More accurate adjusting for lost coins will be a subject for future research. Bitcoin price data is available from different sources but starts at July of 2010. I added the first known Bitcoin prices, $1 for 1,309 Bitcoin in October of 2009, first quote of 0.3 cent on Bitcoin Market in March 2010 and two pizzas worth $41 for 10,000 Bitcoin in May of 2010, and interpolated. Data archaeology will be a subject for future research. We already have the data points for gold: stock to value of 62, market value of 8.5 trillion, and silver: stock to flow of 22, market value of 308 billion, which I use as a benchmark. Model. A first scatter plot of stock to flow versus market value shows that it is better to use logarithmic values or axes for market value because it spans 8 orders of magnitude, from $10,000 to $100 billion. Using logarithmic values or axes for stock to flow as well reveals a nice linear relationship between the natural log of the stock to flow and natural log of the market value. Note that I use natural logarithm, ln with base e, and not common logarithm, log with base 10, which would yield similar results. And here we have the now rather famous chart of the market value versus the stock to flow. And the stock to flow starts at 0.1 and heads over 100 as things move forward. And then we also have the market value starting at 1,000 and moving up to 100 trillion on the y-axis. And both of these are logarithmic. And then it also shows the color coding of the number of months until the halving, until the next halving takes place. And it shows a rather remarkable trend and rubber banding effect of how closely the price is pulled back towards the stock to flow model whenever it either overshoots the price or undershoots it when a new halving occurs. So it's a very, very interesting, and if you have not like really looked at this chart, this is one of the most fascinating charts. And then it also has silver and gold on the chart showing where their values are in relation to the stock-to-flow model as well. Fitting a linear regression to the data confirms what can be seen with the naked eye: a statistically significant relationship between stock-to-flow and market value, 95% R-squared, significance of F2.3 e to the negative 17, p-value of slope 2.3 e to the negative 17. The likelihood that a relationship between SF and market value is caused by chance is close to zero. Of course, other factors also impact price: regulation, hacks, and other news. That is why R-squared is not 100%, and not all dots are on the straight black line. However, the dominant driving factor seems to be scarcity and the stock to flow. What is very interesting is that gold and silver, which are totally different markets, are in line with the Bitcoin model values for stock to flow. This gives extra confidence in the model. Note that at the peak of the bull market in December 2017, Bitcoin stock to flow was 22, and Bitcoin market value was $230 billion, very close to silver. Because halvings have such a big impact on stock to flow, I put months until the next halving as a color overlay in the chart. Dark blue is the halving month, and red is just after the halving. Next halving is May 2020. Current stock to flow of 25 will double to 50. Very close to gold, stock to flow of 62. The predicted market value for Bitcoin after May 2020 halving is $1 trillion, which translates into a Bitcoin price of $55,000. That is quite spectacular. I guess time will tell, and we will probably know 1 or 2 years after the halving, in 2020 or 2021. A great out-of-sample test of this hypothesis and model. People ask me where all the money needed for a $1 trillion Bitcoin market value would come from. My answer? Silver, gold, countries with negative interest rates, Europe, Japan, the US soon, countries with predatory governments, Venezuela, China, Iran, Turkey, etc. Billionaires and millionaires hedging against quantitative easing, and institutional investors discovering the best performing asset of the last 10 years. We can also model Bitcoin price directly with stock to flow. The formula, of course, has different parameters, but the result is the same: 95% R squared and a predicted Bitcoin price of $55,000 with stock to flow of 50 after the May 2020 halving. I plotted Bitcoin model price based on stock to flow, the black, and actual Bitcoin price over time, with the number of blocks as the color overlay. Again, we have another great chart. Don't forget that I will have the link to the original article in the show notes as well as the Twitter post so that you can go see this. And these charts really lend themselves to actually seeing the correlation between these two, between the model and the actual price, because it's really astounding. So it's definitely something to go check out. Note the goodness of FIT, especially the almost immediate price adjustment after the November 2012 halving. Adjustment after June 2016 halving was much slower, possibly due to Ethereum competition and the DAO hack. Also, you see less blocks per month in the blue in the first year 2009 and during downward difficulty adjustments the end of 2011, mid-2015, and end of 2018. Introduction of GPU miners in the 2010 to 2011 and ASIC miners in 2013 resulted in more blocks per month, which you can see in red. Power laws and fractals. Also very interesting is that there is indication of a power law relationship. The linear regression function, or the natural log of its market value, equals 3.3 times the natural log of the stock to flow plus 14.6. It can be written as a power law function. Market value equals the EXP function to 14.6 times the stock to flow to 3.3. Power laws are scarce. You don't find them very often. The possibility of a power law with 95% R squared over 8 orders of magnitude adds confidence that the main driver of Bitcoin value is correctly captured with stock to flow. A power law is a relationship in which a relative change in one quantity gives rise to a proportional relative change in the other quantity, independent of the initial size of those quantities. Every halving, Bitcoin stock to flow doubles and market value increases 10x. This is a constant factor. Power laws are interesting because they reveal an underlying regularity in the properties of seemingly random complex systems. See appendix for some famous power law examples. Complex systems usually have properties where changes between phenomena at different scales are independent of the scales we are looking at. This self-similar property underlies power law relationships. We see this in Bitcoin too. 2011, 2014, and 2018 crashes look very similar, all have around 80% dips, but on totally different scales, respectively $10, $1,000, $10,000. If you don't use log scales, you will not see it. Scale invariance and self-similarity has a link with fractals. In fact, parameter 3.3 in the power law function above is the fractal dimension. For more information on fractals, see the famous length of coastlines study. Conclusion. Bitcoin is the first scarce digital object the world has ever seen. It is scarce like silver and gold, and can be sent over the internet, radio, satellite, etc. Surely this digital scarcity has value, but how much? In this article, I quantify scarcity using stock to flow and use stock to flow to model Bitcoin's value. A statistically significant relationship between stock to flow and market value exists. The likelihood that the relationship between stock to flow and market value is caused by chance is close to zero. Adding confidence in the model, gold and silver, which are totally different markets, are in line with the Bitcoin model values for stock to flow. and there is indication of a power-law relationship. The model predicts a Bitcoin market value of $1 trillion after the next halving in May 2020, which translates into a Bitcoin price of $55,000. All right, and that will conclude modeling Bitcoin's value with scarcity by Plan B, or 100 trillion USD. And I am going to take a break real quick, grab myself another coffee, and we will jump back in and talk about this amazing piece and a really fantastic pricing model for estimating and predicting Bitcoin's value. So let's go ahead and hit our sponsor, and we'll come right back. All right, so let's talk about 100 trillion USDs. Again, that is that's the Twitter tag, but he goes by Plan B. Let's talk about this incredible model for valuing the Bitcoin market against its scarcity. You really have to look at the charts to kind of see how powerful this correlation is, particularly with the months. I love the fact that he color codes the months until the next halving, because after these huge swings, what you see is it slingshots back to that power regression, that straight, like perfectly sloped line on the log chart of the market value versus its scarcity. And it's so funny because the markets recover or whatever, it starts to calm down and volatility decreases as it gets closer to that line. And then you have a halving and you see just how it just shoots away. it shoots so far away from the line because our new flow in the stock to flow model, the asset becomes intensely more scarce. And then that's when you see subsequent growths in the market value trying to catch up. And almost every time at the peak, it overshoots and then has to come back down in order to find that equilibrium. And if you actually look at where we are right now, we're actually far more in line, not very far off from that power regression, that straight line. This is kind of, it would actually have technically predicted that we were going to come back up off the 3,000 range, back between 12,000 and 20,000 roughly. It's really hard to see on these log charts just because how compact how close together the 900,000 and the 800,000 mark are when you're looking at the ones. As you get closer to the next order of magnitude, the differences in the prices get harder and harder to tell. So again, you kind of have to look at the chart to see this. Now I want to go over a couple of the statistical relationship things that he talks about, like the R-squared. The R-squared is really, he doesn't really straight up define it, but it's something in investment. It's just a way of measuring the difference between your proposed model and how well the actual investment aligns with that model. So if the model predicts a price change to the upside, to what ratio, in a sense, it's not a clear ratio, but to what degree does the actual price respond to that and move with the predictor, move with the model? And the fact that this is a 95% correlation is pretty astounding. And when he says the p-value of slope 2.3 e to the negative 17th, the p-value slope is another way to measure essentially correlation. It's just another way to essentially decide how accurate this model is. And kind of how it goes is the lower the p-value, the better the predictor actually is a meaningful, the better your model is a meaningful relate has a meaningful relationship with what the actual value does. So if you're expecting, again, if you're expecting the, if the predictor or the model says that this is overpriced or underpriced, and then the actual variable and the value you're measuring responds to that and moves with it, like back to equilibrium or back to the model, then you should have a lower p-value. And anything less than 0.05 is significant, is considered a significant correlation. This is significantly less than 0.05. And he recently just posted on, oh man, where is it? I didn't close it, did I? Oh man, I think I did. Let me see if I can find it real quick. But what he did in the chart that he posted was he took out a lot of the data points. He would, instead of using the 111 monthly data points, which would just show more of the volatility, he actually showed more of... he took it, I think they were like October. Let's see. Before. Okay, here we are. So it's the 2012 stock to flow model. And what he's doing here is, I'll read the quote real quick, or the tweet real quick. The stock to flow model made with the 2009 to 2012 data, only four data points before any halving. So there's a green line that just stops in 2012, and they've got four price data points that he's using from. And it correctly predicts the 2013 to 2019 seven out of sample data points, and the blue line, which it will like show going forward, with a 99.5% R squared. So this is unbelievable correlation. And what he's doing here is showing, he's extrapolating this model from 2012, stopping the data up to 2012, and then drawing a seven out of sample data points. So he's ignoring exactly, like pulling from like the blockchain or whatever. He's getting what 2012 would estimate the future would bring if we were using this model. And then those seven out of sample data points versus the October monthly closing prices, which he pulls from every single year, and there's a 99.5% R squared on the out of sample data. And on the in sample data, the data that we actually are pulling from 2009 to 2012, there's a 99.7 R squared. That is incredible correlation. And honestly, when we talk about this in the terms of scarcity, when he shows like charts that, if you're not following Plan B, by the way, if you're not like looking at these charts and like thinking about this, you are crazy, crazy missing out. Because A, you should definitely be following at 100 trillion USD. The data that he's pulling together is just fascinating to think about. And he's got it compared to like how it's like its valuation in accordance to like platinum, palladium, silver, diamonds, gold, and their stock to flows. And he's got these charts, and it shows the diamonds are like right on this predictive line of the stock to flow, and it's like $1.2 trillion, I believe, is, oh, it's not quite 1.1. God, those log charts mess me up. But it's basically putting Bitcoin undervalued at its current state, and is predictive of like come like the beginning of 2021 that the stock to flow value, the price of Bitcoin, that it should be swinging back toward, whether it's shot past it at this point, which considering the fact that you're looking at 6 months out from a halving, it's very likely that we're going to have slingshotted above the stock to flow model and then coming back down, because that's historically what happens, is there's too much momentum as it's trying to catch up with the new scarcity flow in the actual market. So I'd be inclined to bet that it would be coming back down, but at 2021 it's indicating a price of $100,000 per coin, and it's not until 2023 and going into 2024 that there's significant change to it again. But 24 and 25, pushes into the $1 million per Bitcoin territory. So between 2025 and 2028, that's what this stock-to-flow model is predicting. Now, obviously, this model has to break down at some point for two reasons. One, we're not going to be pricing things in dollars when this thing is significant enough to be pulling trillions of dollars from other markets, like trillions in now dollars from other markets, is that it won't be an S-curve of like, oh, it starts increasing and then it levels off and it becomes a dollar price. No, it will continue to increase in this gradual fashion until it's large enough that it's soaking money out of the dollar. So what you're seeing is an exponential effect. You're seeing a double effect where not only is Bitcoin growing in value from the dollars coming into it as an investment, but you're seeing a greater impact on the value of the dollar being cut down. So you'll see an amplification of it. So when you're reaching like $1 million per Bitcoin or higher, you're looking at doubling the stock to flow model when we're talking about comparing it. And doubling is just kind of a pulling it out of my ass. It's just an example of the fact that if we double the value of Bitcoin, necessarily the value has to come from something else. And that's when it starts being stupid to price things in dollars. Like Bitcoin will be the ultimate measuring stick to price against at that point. And also when you get something like market saturation in a monetary good like this, we've never seen one that is this scarce. I mean, it literally stops. The flow stops. Like, there will be no new Bitcoin issued. No such thing. No such thing in the natural world. Bitcoin is the first money that has ever done that. So it will genuinely act as an unmovable metric to value and price things against. So as we figure out how to produce more efficiently, and as the economy becomes more productive, as our labor becomes more valuable and our time, it takes less time to do things, we will see things fall. It's essentially what we see in the computer market, where progress is incredibly fast and we see prices fall constantly of all goods. Like, you know, in 3 years, my phone has, you know, no value or like a 20th of its value because the new phones are just so much more powerful. And the ability to create something that is the equivalent of my current phone is so cheap. Like, I mean, we have smartphones now that, you know, you can get for $10, $20 that you can actually put little apps on. Like the cheap, the ability to make cheap processing and memory now is unbelievable. But what we'll essentially do is we'll experience that same level of deflation in a lot of markets. It won't be the same throughout because some markets won't be able to, some markets won't reiterate or innovate, obviously, as quickly as something like Moore's Law does in the computer markets. But because of the scarcity of Bitcoin, any efficiency gain at any stage in the production, it will still compound. So if we get a little bit better at using our energy, well, then even something like shirts use energy. It takes energy to make shirts. Those prices will start to come down in relation to Bitcoin. And then a slight increase in the efficiency of creating shirts or in, you know, new designs and new models, taking less human labor to do it, a machine that actually just kind of stamps these things out constantly, et cetera, et cetera. And anywhere down the line, like just the ability to feed the employees that keep the machines running, being able to do that more efficiently, lowering the cost of moving the chicken from the farm to the actual sandwich that you're serving to your employee. If that decreases in price and increases in efficiency, well, then so does, again, the entire process that creates shirts or TVs or whatever it is, whatever production process that we're working in. So all of these things will fall in relation to Bitcoin as things become more efficient. And I think this leads very strongly into the discussion on deflation versus inflation, which produces a sustainable and healthy economy. And I think, I don't know, maybe it's just me, and like I've been reading this kind of stuff forever. It seems obvious to me that that's deflation, but I want to address this in full and hit a really hard argument on why deflation is vastly preferable and is a more justice and actually a something that with inflation you cannot have certain degrees of freedom. It is only with deflation and sound money that you can actually have certain levels of economic liberties and also social liberties in an indirect way. And I'll kind of hit that argument, I think, in another episode soon. I'm hoping to hit it tomorrow, but it means I've got to really focus and get the last of my thoughts worked out here and kind of fine-tune it for tonight. But this model is really intuitive, and I love the data that he's putting together. He's dropping stuff constantly. He's got another great one that he dropped very recently about how Bitcoin markets, bull markets, start at the difficulty bottom. Like when the difficulty actually bottoms out in the bear markets, you have essentially it's measuring miner capitulation. When do they finally start giving up? And it bottoms out, and then we start increasing again. Well, basically, right now we are in that increasing stage, and it would be essentially predicting that in another 10,000, 20,000 blocks, somewhere around like 100 days, like right in the middle of there, somewhere I think it's like 70 to like 140-ish days, that we'll be hitting the green periods on this block difficulty versus the price adjustment, like the price growth rate, and we'll be back into green territory. And essentially, historically, if you look, all of the green area is heavy growth, is nothing but upward momentum at that point until we make the adjustment to the new halving and basically overshoot the next scarcity level, the next scarcity value prediction of our model, and then come back down to try to find what the actual equilibrium is. And in his article, he says it's $55,000. But again, that's kind of like, I think it would be in our previous marker. Yeah, we would be at like 2017 was somewhere right around 7,000-ish. It looks like between 2017 and 18. So, and that's what we saw. We saw from the $20,000 peak, we pulled back down into the $6,000 and $7,000 range, and we sat there for quite some time. And then kind of we had our minor capitulation. We had our final swing down to where Bitcoin was deeply undervalued in relation to the stock to flow model. And then as it sat there for long enough, well, now we got back into the $10,000 range for the stock to flow model, and it acted like a magnet, and it just pulled it right back up. And we're getting closer and closer to a halving, and I think it's going to start. It makes sense that it would front run now. Like, this is less of an anomaly, less of a confusion in the market for investing in this good. Like, people know halvings are coming. CNBC talks about the halving. In fact, Joe Squawk just mentioned, I think it was today or something, about this actual model. It was very recently. So this has spread like wildfire. It is crazy to have been watching this because I saw this when Plan B was, I don't know, I feel like maybe 1,000, 2,000 followers. It was right around something that was near my follower count because I was like, this is fascinating. And I jumped on this so fast because it's just such a, there have been a lot of models, but none of them have been great. They've been decent, but they've all had faults, like the NVT and like measuring via like transaction count and stuff in an attempt to actually measure the network. Like the square of the number of users, and then we've got like the market value, the realized market value? God, I forget the names and exact acronyms of all of these things. But there's a lot of very interesting models, but they only seem to work for like a short period of time. And in that way, it's cool to see one that doesn't try to measure the network of it, because that data is so hard to guess. Like it's it's coming from so many data points that are easily manipulated or hard to verify in some way, like how many Coinbase users are there. And then obviously transactions, you've got a hard cap on the amount of data we can put in the blockchain, and then we're moving things off into new layers. You know, it's like measuring the size of the internet with the number of IP addresses. And obviously that doesn't work. As soon as you start getting into home networks and you have 10, 20 devices in a home that are all on their own, that they're on one IP address on the network, well, then it becomes pointless to, like, that metric breaks down really quick. Early on in the internet, that would have worked. And that's kind of what the NVT, like, kind of seems to fail at, is that it worked really great early on, and then it started to break down. But this one makes a lot more sense from Bitcoin, as the concept of Bitcoin as an asset, an actual scarce asset that you can use for a huge number of purposes. The fact that people say, I mean, I love Connor Brown's article about Bitcoin doesn't have any utility, and he means it in the sense of alternate, which, by the way, I've read that one on the show. If you have not listened to it, another great one to go into. And obviously he links to, he quotes from a number of different great Szabo pieces in this one. I think one of the quotes is from Money, Blockchains, and Social Scalability, and then obviously from the quintessential Shelling Out. Again, both I've read on the show. I will try to remember to link to those and throw those in the show notes so you can check those out. But, oh man, it just, I don't even remember what the hell I was getting into. Oh, Connor Brown is saying that Bitcoin had no extra utility, and he's meaning it in the sense that you can't use Bitcoin for other than like what's within the Bitcoin network. Like it is a self-contained thing. I can't take a Bitcoin and, you know, use it for a non-monetary or non-value store purpose. It doesn't make any sense. It's a digital thing. It's a proof of like the power of Bitcoin and the fact that it's an unalterable accounting system. It's an unmanipulatable. I guess that's right. Accounting system, an uncorruptible accounting system. One that if we built as a foundation to tether things to, not a shout out to. not a shout out to some shit tokens, but if we can tether things or link things to, so that they fall back, so they resort to Bitcoin as essentially the accounting court for all of our monetary goods and all of our store values and contractual arrangements, there's an unbelievable utility and power in one that executes 100% the same, no matter where you are in the world, no matter what jurisdiction you are or who you are. No social hierarchy or political hierarchy or occupational hierarchy values one transaction over another. It's completely a flat playing field throughout the network, and it's decentralized, and therefore, it's run by the people. Like I don't know, that seems a little bit cliche, but it is, you know, and it's just a fascinating, it's so fascinating. But so basically it's predicting 2021 at 100,000 and 2025 and onward at 1 million and pushing higher. And this would suggest that this is going to move insanely quick. And the ability for governments and other goods to actually respond to this is going to fall away very quickly. This is going to get out of hand extremely fast. And I'd be very inclined to think that there might be a time where people are mining just out of a form of securing their asset. So, like, if somebody is mining and only getting back, like, 80% of their good, like, of their input, but if you're holding, you know, $1 trillion worth of value in that chain, it might make sense to burn an extra 20% in order to know you're creating a buffer between your ownership and, like, any exchange that you're dealing with. I'm not sure if I explained that very well. An example, like people, large, extremely wealthy people spend enormous amounts of money securing their wealth, right? They spend on vaults. They buy like entire pieces of property. They set up overseas accounts. They do tons of work. They hire lawyers. They hire accountants. They create structures of things in order to secure the wealth. And it makes sense that when you have that much wealth to protect, that you would want to make sure you have a stake in creating that energy barrier. Like the last episode, we talked about immutability in the blockchain and what it meant for Bitcoin to be immutable, and, you know, writing things in digital stone, et cetera, that you would want to be able to know that you were contributing to that energy barrier, even if it meant at a loss. I mean, because technically, you know, when you hire an armored car to move gold or something, you're quote unquote doing, you're securing gold at a loss. It's a enormous cost to secure it. So it might make sense that people might front run this as an actual cost for the added benefit of knowing the degree of security that their transaction has. And it could be a situation like, because when we're talking about assurances, I'm getting into a way different topic here. In fact, no, we'll come back to that, because I want to do one on the security assurances by Nick Carter. I think I want to hit that one soon, because that one's really good so far. Actually, haven't finished it. I've gone through and I've started having to skim so many of these articles because there's just, my list is massive right now. But that definitely seems like so far what I've read of it looks really, really great. And I love talking about the assurances of a transaction and how much time has to pass before the value of your transaction is defended by the same amount of energy, like value and energy, as the transaction itself, so that reversing it would essentially cost the amount that was spent. But again, we'll get there. That's a whole different conversation. But I don't know. This gets me so excited because obviously, holy shit, bullish orange coin go up. Those are all great things. But it's just fascinating to have an intuitive model that not only predicts, even when you take early data points, this one that he just dropped not too long ago about the 2009-12 data that correctly predicted everything in the next 6 to 7 years, is just fascinating. And I think this is the only model that makes serious sense. And we have no idea where this goes. We have no idea what it looks like to have a perfect monetary instrument. There is no such thing as something that we have used as money that can't, that does not have a flow, that does not have new coins, new supply of that good being issued into the market. So I think after 2025 to 2030, I think everything is off the table. I don't think we have any idea how this is going to play out. And all we can know is that Bitcoin is going to be immensely, immensely valuable. And we will see where it goes. And I think it's going to be a crazy awesome future. Even without riding the wave of Bitcoin, I think everyone is going to benefit massively from the literal trillions of dollars saved from corruption, an additional $1 trillion saved in inflation, and the confiscation of value from the producers into the hands of the moneymakers and the bankers and the manipulators. And then after all of that, to realign incentives with the long-term preference, with to realign culture with savings, the savings mentality, to end this horrific debt crisis that we are drowning in. The amount of good that this will produce, even if you don't buy any Bitcoin, I believe will be just incredible. And I think the value produced as we find a stable global monetary good, I think, and I don't mean that it's stable in price, I mean that stable in its metrics, in its core monetary propositions, or its monetary characteristics, I guess. But as we find that, I think the value that will be unleashed will dwarf what the internet has done for the world. And I think it's crazy, crazy exciting to think that this could truly happen on the order of 10 years. You know, like we've seen what 10 to 20 years can do, and it only makes sense that the next 10 years plays out like the last 20, and these are exponential trends. So I think we're going to grossly underestimate the impact that this has in the long term, because we're trying to create that linear, we're trying to put that linear growth. You know, like people do not think in exponents. You know, we think in linear progression. So when we lay out kind of the current state of things going forward on a linear growth path, it looks like, oh, we're 50 years out. But if you do it exponentially, when you actually see the compounding effects of these technologies and the corrections that a technology like this could work through, like, or could start to facilitate, I think we're going to see some, I think it's just going to be crazier than we can possibly imagine. It has been a wild, wild ride already, and I do not think it is going to calm down for quite some time. So anyway, that's just my rant about the stock the flow model, and absolutely love that Plan B or 100 trillion USD, whatever I call them, put this together. It's amazing work. And he is producing charts all the time that are looking at it from new perspectives and showing just how to value these things and what to compare it to. And the unbelievable accuracy of this prediction model still blows my mind. So do not forget to follow. If you are not following him, what the hell? You're missing out on some of the most amazing charts and data points in the Bitcoin space. So you got to do that. I will make sure to link to all of his stuff in the show notes, to the article, so that you can see the data points and the charts that I was pulling from and trying to describe, also so that you can follow him on Medium. And of course, drop some massive applause on this work. And I will link to his Twitter and tag him in Twitter as well. So yeah, follow him. If you're not, you're just missing out. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening, per usual. And, I will catch you tomorrow. Not sure exactly what I'm diving into tomorrow. Like I said, I'm hoping to, get some thoughts together and, finalize some notes on a couple of episodes. Maybe tonight if I get a chance to. I am getting my goodie bag, stuff ready for BitBlock Boom. And don't forget, if you are joining me, August tomorrow is the price increase. So you got to get it now. Use my coupon code or discount code CC and you'll get 30% off. Don't miss it. If you're going to get your tickets, get them now. And you'll also get a nice goodie from the crypto economy in your goodie bag. So with that, I think that's everything. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. I am at the crypto economy on Twitter. Follow me up there as well. I'm getting so close to 4,000. It's happening. And thank you guys so much for listening to the show. Thank you guys for joining me here on this insane ride through the crypto economy, its development, the ideology that it's born from, and all the crazy stuff around Bitcoin that is empowering this thing and making the crypto economy a reality. Don't forget to share this out with everybody you know in the Bitcoin and crypto economy space. And until next time, I'm Guy Swan, signing off. Take it easy, guys.